This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Even before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark Roe v. Wade decision, scholars noted that states with the most restrictive abortion laws in the U.S. also had higher maternal mortality rates. Now that many states are enacting stricter abortion bans, many researchers and doctors are warning that death rates related to pregnancy and delivery could increase further. Joining me to discuss maternal mortality in a post-Roe world are Dr. Odell Owens, former president and CEO of Interact for Health. Welcome, Dr. Owens.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Allison Norris, an associate professor at The Ohio State University College of Public Health and College of Medicine and co-principal investigator of the Ohio Policy Evaluation Network, or OPEN. Thanks for being here, Dr. Norris.
Thank you so much.
You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Norris, I'd like to start with you. Tell us more about the research that's been done about states with restrictive abortion laws and their maternal mortality rates. What's behind those estimates and those expectations that maternal mortality rates will increase?
Thank you so much for that question, Lucy, and thank you for joining us together to have this really important conversation. There is a kind of a very specific piece and then a more general piece, and I want to just touch briefly on both of them. Abortion is a very safe medical procedure, and pregnancy and childbirth are much less safe. A lot of people don't know that. There's a lot of stigma around abortion, and people think that abortion is dangerous, but actually it's one of the safest medical procedures that we have. And childbirth is actually 14 times more dangerous to the life of the pregnant person than abortion is. And so in places where abortion is not available and people don't have the freedom to have a decision about whether they want to keep a pregnancy or not, and then are forced to have a birth, people are forced to have a much riskier situation of pregnancy and birth. And so we see, unfortunately, there are measurable increases in maternal deaths when people don't have the availability of abortion.
Mm. I'm sorry, were you going to say something else? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was going to put it in the broader context. When we look at things like maternal mortality and infant mortality, we are looking at a very specific and the worst, most terrible outcome. But those things take place in a context where the best end of that context is infants thrive and adults thrive. And then in the middle, there are many, many more people who will have a health threat or a very risky or dangerous thing will happen to their health. And by providing people with excellent care through all of this sort of progressive health supportive measures that we can make in the state of Ohio, including access to abortion, we provide a context where people who are capable of getting pregnant and people who carry pregnancies to term and the infants that are born are more likely not only to survive, but also to have really good health outcomes. And so that larger context of how we think about providing healthcare, accessible, high quality, excellent healthcare to the people in the state is really an important part of the conversation.
Mm. And Dr. Owens, talk to us about your concerns when it comes to maternal mortality in this post-Roe era.
Well, I think you had a perfect example in the 10-year-old Ohio girl who was raped and had to go to Indiana to get an abortion. A 10-year-old's body is not prepared to have a 6, 7, or 8-pound baby. That's going to be a cesarean section. And once you have a cesarean section, there are certainly risks. And the mortality rate in this country is going up. It's not going down. And C-section rates are going up in this country. So, again, I think that's just an example of an example that everybody can quickly look at, that in a case of a rape, this girl could not have a vaginal delivery. Her pelvis is not big enough and not capable enough. So there's a lot of complications associated with that.
Mm. And Dr. Owens, do you expect to see a disproportionate impact on people of color and low-income people under these more restrictive laws?
Oh, absolutely. Because certainly we know that the infant mortality rate's almost twice that in African Americans as compared to whites. So taking out that option of not being able to terminate a pregnancy at a certain period of time is only going to increase that. Mm.
Dr. Norris, talk with us. Are there links between maternal mortality and infant mortality? I know infant mortality has been a huge subject and an issue that Greater Cincinnati, Hamilton County have been focused on for many years now. But what are the links between the health of the person giving birth and the baby?
We can think about infant mortality as a barometer of the health of the community, and it's this sort of worst leading edge indicator. And infant mortality is very much linked to the maternal health and the pregnancy status of the pregnant person. Dr. Owens, of course, gave an example of that it can be extremely risky for some people to be pregnant, and it's both risky to the pregnant person and it's if the person carries the pregnancy to term, it's risky for the baby. Prematurity is a driving, a leading cause of infant mortality. And prematurity is linked directly to birth spacing. So if people don't have access to healthcare services and contraception in order to do birth spacing, there's a direct link to infant mortality. And maternal complications of pregnancy itself are both risky for the pregnant person and for the infant. So maternal complications of pregnancy are linked both to maternal deaths and to infant deaths.
So, Dr. Norris, what do you think Ohio could expect to see when it comes to infant mortality if the expectation is that these more restrictive abortion laws could lead to more maternal mortality? Are there any conclusions or predictions you can make related to infant mortality?
I think maybe the more important piece to examine in that question that you're asking is what is it that we should be doing for the health and well-being of all Ohioans, from infants to adults? And it is really important to think about the underlying opportunities for people to have best health. For an example, we know very clearly that banning abortion will be the hardest on communities who are already disadvantaged. We see that infant mortality rates are the highest among Black people, and we know that maternal mortality rates are much, much higher in Black people than in white people. So when we create when we reinforce and deepen a health inequity that's already very deep in our state, we know we're going in the opposite direction of what the leadership across the state and the healthcare providers and the communities in our state want, which is the best health and well-being for all of the people in the state.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about maternal mortality in a post-Roe world. My guests are Dr. Odell Owens, former president and CEO of Interact for Health, and Dr. Allison Norris, an associate professor at The Ohio State University College of Public Health and College of Medicine and co-principal investigator of the Ohio Policy Evaluation Network, or OPEN. Dr. Owens, there are so many people who argue, who favor these more restrictive abortion laws and argue the focus should be on the fetus during these discussions. What do you think about that, and what do you think is the result that comes of that focus?
Well, I think first of all, it is a much it's a greater topic than the focus on the fetus. For me, I've always said that an abortion is a decision between that woman, her gynecologist, and her God. And so it has to depend on the situation. You know, certainly, you know, when I was practicing, there were women that got pregnant and then had fetuses that we knew had no brain. Simply had no brain. So it just seems so unfair that you would have that woman carry that pregnancy to term only to have a baby that's going to die a few hours at birth. You have other situations, as the doctor mentioned, spacing is a real issue. If you can try to space your pregnancies out, you decrease the number of premature deliveries and therefore premature deaths. So I think there's a variety of situations that fit. So just to say we're going to focus on the fetus, I think that's short term. Again, I think what happened in Kansas is very important in that the population, the general population, almost 59% felt that the abortion law should be protected. That's a bold statement yesterday.
I was thinking about what you're saying, Dr. Owens. I've been thinking a lot about that too, because I think that the people of Kansas turned out because they understand this phenomenon that's also been really clearly demonstrated in research, which is that in families where a woman is denied an abortion, the women and their families experience burdens for years afterwards. So there might or might not be a death, which is the most terrible outcome, but when people don't experience the worst outcome and live, women and their families are more likely to live in poverty. Their existing children are less likely to meet developmental milestones. Women are less likely to be able to achieve life goals. So denying an abortion creates economic hardship and insecurity that lasts for years. So it is important to kind of talk about those long-term impacts on the people who live with these restrictions and constraints, rather than being able to have the decision-making autonomy around how they want to live their life.
We'll continue our discussion about maternal mortality in a post-Roe world in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll discuss monkeypox in the greater Cincinnati region. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about maternal mortality in a post-Roe world. My guests are Dr. Odell Owens, former president and CEO of Interact for Health, and Dr. Allison Norris, an associate professor at The Ohio State University College of Public Health and College of Medicine, and co-principal investigator of the Ohio Policy Evaluation Network, or OPEN. So we did get a call from a listener named Ellen. Ellen calling in said that in Europe, they have far shorter allowable abortion periods. They have a far lower maternal mortality rate. They have more doulas. She's wondering if more doulas may be a factor. Our producer, Selena Reeder, found that across Europe, the picture is far from uniform. Some countries, such as the United Kingdom and Sweden, offer broad grounds for abortion, but most UK nations permit abortion up to 24 weeks. Dr. Norris, I don't know if you've studied any of the differences between abortion restrictions in Europe and the United States and how that plays out in terms of maternal mortality.
I think the important thing that I appreciate that question very much, and it points to that comprehensive type of healthcare environment that is the best for people who are who need healthcare for any kind of a problem that they're having, or for a pregnancy, or for the termination of a pregnancy. That we know that in the United States, in the state of Ohio, if abortion were to be banned outright, not allowable at all, we would see a 14% direct increase in deaths amongst pregnant people because of this fact that giving birth is more risky than having an abortion. And so in communities like some European communities where healthcare is accessible in local communities, in the places where people live, and and that healthcare is affordable, we'll see better health outcomes across the board.
Dr. Owens, you mentioned before this example of when you were in practice, some women having babies who were developing in the uterus without a brain, and the fact that that is not compatible with life. I guess I'm wondering if more people are required to carry fetuses and babies that are not compatible with life to term, will that just by definition increase the infant mortality rate? I mean, many of those pregnancies have been terminated up to this point. What do you expect from that, Dr. Owens?
Well, yes, when I was in training, you know, one could not issue a birth certificate unless the fetus was at least 20 weeks. And in some places that may have changed. So certainly, yes, if you're now going to allow all of those pregnancies to go to term, then they have to go into the category of early death. You know, infant mortality rate is defined by of a number of deaths within that first year. So those babies tend to last only a few hours or a few days. But Lucy, I want to just illustrate this by, I remember back in the 70s and 80s when there were a lot of lawsuits against physicians when they didn't deliver the perfect babies. And in fact, at one point, they really wanted physicians to say to every woman who walked into the office who was pregnant, at the first visit, say, pregnancy is hazardous to your health. You could die from this. They wanted doctors to say that. Doctors didn't buy into that. But can you imagine your most happiest time someone's telling you that you could die? But again, it tells you that pregnancy is not safe. The other thing I want to add that we haven't talked about when we talk about the difference in the rates between blacks and whites is that we know that the infant mortality rate in a black woman, a black woman with a college degree has a higher infant mortality rate than a white female with a high school diploma. Mm. So we have to talk about the role of racism in all of this. And that hasn't improved. And in fact, and I say that because many of the journals in the last couple of years have said racism is a cause of high infant mortality rate in black women. It's not me saying it now. It's the medical community. So we have to deal with all that. So how is that going to change? Now you're going to have more births coming from the minority community, and we can only expect that rate to go up. Mm.
Dr. Owens, do you think these more restrictive laws could lead to concern or confusion among doctors about how to deal with pregnancy complications? I mean, there are a lot of scary things that can happen throughout a pregnancy. Is there going to be confusion? I know Ohio's law currently has an exception to save the life of the mother, but is that going to be confusing for doctors, do you think?
Well, I think what's going to happen, those states are going to come up with a very defined list of what does that mean, the health of the mother. Because that isn't in one way well-defined. But certainly for a physician who takes a patient to the operating room and has an incomplete abortion, spontaneous abortion, the procedure is very similar to what you would do if you were doing an abortion. So there's got to be a lot of documentation because there's got to be people in that OR staff going to say, how do I know that fetus really is dead? That you're calling it an incomplete, but it really is. So it's going to be a lot of confusion about this. The sad part for me is that certain states had to make that special category that you could operate on an ectopic pregnancy. At one point, they were going to say you couldn't stop an ectopic pregnancy, which is a pregnancy in a tube. And there are pregnancies in a tube that can develop to a heartbeat.
Mm.
As we know, that used to be one of the leading causes of death in pregnant women. It was a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. It cannot survive in the tube. So you have a lot of people without science background making medical conditions or policies.
Yeah. And Dr. Norris, I want to circle back. And, you know, we talked at the top of the show about the expectation that stricter abortion laws would lead to higher maternal mortality. But this isn't because of the kinds of unsafe abortions that happened historically before Roe, right? I mean, I think we've all heard the horror stories of back alley abortions that were very dangerous for people who obtained them. But that's not what we're talking about here when it comes to these higher maternal mortality figures, is it?
The statistics that I was describing to you are based on looking at if all of the people who can't have an abortion have to go through a birth. So what we don't really know what exactly will happen with people who need to have an abortion and can't have one in Ohio. Some people will find the resources to travel out of state. Some people will have a birth and will be experiencing that higher risk of pregnancy, ongoing pregnancy. And some people will self-manage an abortion. And per your comment, self-management of abortion is much, much safer now. There are indeed safe treatments that people can and do manage safely at home. The question feeds itself back into the implication for providers. There is a tremendous amount of confusion for providers. Even prior to the 6-week ban that we have now, there was confusion about what was allowed in Ohio, and it creates a real chill in the important private conversation and dynamic, a trust-filled relationship between patients and their healthcare providers. And that chill, I'm afraid, will extend out into the state in other perhaps unanticipated ways. We need excellent clinicians to be part of our massive health training institutions in the state to maintain the really excellent reputation that our healthcare institutions currently enjoy. And if providers are threatened criminally with criminal penalty for providing healthcare that they're trained to provide, that's safe, that's endorsed by their professional organizations, they will choose to leave the state or they will choose not to come here for their training. And that diminishes opportunities for health and well-being for every Ohioan.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about maternal mortality in a post-Roe world. My guests are Dr. Odell Owens, former president and CEO of Interact for Health, and Dr. Allison Norris, an associate professor at The Ohio State University College of Public Health and College of Medicine and co-principal investigator of OPEN. Dr. Owens, what, if anything, do you think policymakers, decision makers could do to try to change these outcomes, short of changing the restrictive abortion laws? I guess my question is, if we're going to have this restrictive abortion law, is there anything else that could be done among policymakers to try to make sure we don't experience these outcomes?
Well, you know, there are a couple of things. When you look at dollars spent to surround an individual with health support in terms of the social issues associated with a pregnancy, European countries spend far more than we do. We rank so low in social services. So until we can support people who are pregnant to ensure that the health of the mother and the health of the baby are at its highest level, that's one thing. Two, quite honestly, when you look at individuals who are so against abortions, they have not been individuals who have stepped up to take care of those babies when they are born. And so, you know, they don't want the mother on birth control pills or against the birth control pills. So, again, that goes against that spacing issue right there. And they're not there for social services. So I don't trust the state to do anything that's going to really help. Again, I'm a focus on what I know best, and that's the minority population. And when there was a government task force a few years back with the governor, and they thought they were going to be able to decrease infant mortality rate in African American women, and they didn't, because they didn't deal with the whole issue of some of the social issues and the racism.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Norris, what do you think? Are there things that could be done at the state level to try to mitigate this outcome, to try to, even with these more restrictive abortion laws, to kind of avoid these higher maternal mortality rates?
I'm strongly in agreement with Dr. Owens. Poverty reduction work, anti-racism work, and social supports for people who are having babies are absolutely essential and critical, and will really have an impact on the infant and maternal mortality crisis that we currently experience in Ohio. I don't think we can put aside the issue of changing abortion laws, because that has implications for the law, the lifespan of the person who becomes pregnant. And I really urge lawmakers to draw on empathy for people who are seeking this care, vast amounts of scientific evidence about the safety of abortion, and their constituents' views about abortion, which we know the voting people of Ohio strongly wish for individual people to be able to make a private decision about pregnancy with themselves and their healthcare providers.
And yet, what
and Lucy, we've had a great example of that right here in Cincinnati at Children's Hospital, the program that was run by Judy Van Ginkle, with a group of women who were pregnant, got social workers and people to work with them. They got their mortality rate below 5%. It made national news. Below 5%, which was just incredible. I think it got as low as 3% people they were following. So it can be done, but it takes resources and money and a commitment.
Well, I've been talking with Dr. Odell Owens, former president and CEO of Interact for Health, and Dr. Allison Norris, an associate professor at The Ohio State University College of Public Health and College of Medicine, and co-principal investigator of the Ohio Policy Evaluation Network, or OPEN. Thank you both so much for your time and discussing this important issue.
It's been such a privilege. Thank you so very much.
Up next,
as
our region's... Yeah, thank you. Up next, as our region sees its first cases of monkeypox, we talk with experts about what you should know. This is Cincinnati Edition.